Okay. So this, my name is Sarah.
My name is Lauren.
And today we have a guest on. Her name's Jennifer Crawford, and she's from Saturn. She's gonna explain a little more about that in a second. But yeah, we're super excited. We're gonna talk a little bit more about human trafficking and what that looks like in Tucson specifically, but also just in the U.S. So, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, Jennifer?
Sure. My name is Jennifer Crawford, and I'm a detective with Tucson Police Department. I've been on for almost 21 years. Primarily, my background is narcotics and violent crimes, and then I've been working on our human trafficking squad for the last 4 years. Our main unit is actually called the Street Crime Interdiction Unit, which is kind of like a fancy term for like the vice unit. So we're a plainclothes unit, we do undercover work, and then we also facilitate the human trafficking task force.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So 4 years with human trafficking specifically, though, that's a lot of, like, background in that. Did you do anything else back with background of human trafficking, or was that kind of your introduction?
Yeah, no. Before this unit, I spent 8 years in homicide.
Okay.
And then I came to this unit, and I was probably in there for about a year before we got the grant. So our task force is federally funded by the Department of Justice.
Okay.
And it was for 3 years, and we actually just finished. Like September 1st was the end of our grant officially, but we still have some money left, so we have an extension through March 31st.
Okay.
So right now we're working that along with just our regular like unit duties. So we're investigating a lot of other stuff as well.
Gotcha.
So you don't just do specifically, like, cases on human trafficking? It's like...
Yeah, so we'll do, we work narcotics cases, guns cases, obviously human trafficking, labor trafficking, sex trafficking. We do, actually, our unit's also responsible for the licensing in Tucson, so, like, liquor licenses, special events, entertainment clubs, all of that is housed in our unit. Wow. So we do a large variety of stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. How did you decide that you wanted to go down the human trafficking or anti-trafficking route?
Well, I really didn't decide.
Okay.
When I left, I was in homicide for 8 years, and I was just ready for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was just an opening in the unit, and so I just went there. At the time, they didn't really have the grant yet, so they weren't actually doing a whole lot of human trafficking cases. They were kind of getting them. There had been some personal changes that would like take them and investigate them, but not federally funded.
Okay.
And so that wasn't their focus when I went to the unit. And then once I got in the unit, they were still in the middle of drafting the grant, writing it up, and trying to get all the groundwork done. So it kind of came to light after I got in there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. That's a cool little...
Yeah. Was it like anything you expected? Or...
Yeah. I don't know, and I don't really know that I expected anything. It's just definitely, I think, was kind of like a, lack of a better term, like a hot topic kind of in the country. It was starting to be in the news a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people weren't really familiar with what it was. You know, they thought it was just like prostitution and didn't really think it was a big deal. And so a lot of even law enforcement agencies had to get on board and like get trained and like figure out like this is what it really is, this is what's going on. And so once the grant got picked up, it took us probably about a year to really, you know, kind of get going and find a good system that worked.
Yeah.
We also partner, so with our grant for the law enforcement, it's Tucson Police Department's the main grant holder for the funding, but we work with Homeland Security and FBI.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And so that enables us to take cases outside our jurisdiction, which happens a lot. A lot of time, you know, our victims are here from other states, or, you know, we can go to Mexico or the reservation, things like that. Just recently, I got a case where the lady's from Australia. And so we're able to work with the feds to take those cases where we don't have normal jurisdiction.
That's really cool. Okay, so before we jump into a bunch of facts and more on just what is specifically happening in Tucson, I just want to give the definition of human trafficking, which the United Nations defines human trafficking as the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, or receipt of persons by improper means, such as force, abduction, fraud, or coercion for an improper purpose, including forced labor or sexual exploitation. And so some facts about human trafficking in the U.S. Because of the hidden nature of the crime, it is essentially impossible to know with certainty how many people are sex trafficked in the United States. And while statistics vary on the number of children in the U.S. who are trafficked, we firmly believe that the number is by far in excess of 100,000. All of these facts are coming from the U.S. Institute of Human Trafficking as well.
Does that all sound
pretty accurate?
Yeah, as far as like the definition and what that kind of means is basically like, aside from just the trafficker, who we also refer to as like a pimp, that anybody else can be charged for any of those elements. Like, it can be someone who's just involved in the recruitment, someone who's involved in hiding somebody, harboring, maybe somebody drives somebody from point A to point B, but they're not necessarily the main trafficker. All those people can be potentially charged. If it's adults, we have to prove those elements of the force, fraud, or coercion. If they're a minor, we don't have to prove those.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's kind of just the main difference for us. And the statistics, it's pretty accurate as far as, I don't know if it was juvenile. Did you have one? Oh, yeah, number of children. So NCMEC, which is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, I think it's from last year's statistics. I could be off by a little bit, but 2017, they estimated that like 1 in 7 kids were likely victims of child sex trafficking in the United States. With 88% of those coming from like foster homes, high risk care, things like that, obviously, which makes them a little bit more vulnerable. But yeah.
Wow, 1 in 7.
That's a lot.
Like when you, I don't know, when you think, that's crazy.
Is that 1 in 7 overall or 1 in 7 from?
That was reported. So some, it's referenced the number that was reported to them for like missing kids. Okay. So it's 1 in 7 out of that number, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's like a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah.
And then out of that statistic group, it's like 1 in 7.
Okay.
With 88% being like from like foster homes or group homes or things like that.
Yeah. Okay. So kind of more going into, what does your day to day look like in your job?
So right now, we are kind of making the transition from our full-time human trafficking task force to back to our regular duties.
Okay.
So it just depends. We have undercover cases going on that involve narcotic sales, gun sales, things like that. People, felons who are prohibited and aren't allowed to buy weapons. So we have those cases going on in addition to getting potential sex trafficking cases, runaway juvenile cases. A lot of times people will contact us about just suspicions or tips, like they have a location or a house or somebody that they think is where prostitution's being conducted.
Wow.
So we get a lot of that kind of stuff. We do a variety of undercover operations, probably something at least once a week, whether it's trafficking related or like narcotic related. And a lot of times they overlap.
Yeah.
As well, that's very frequent that happens. Every day is usually different, like there's not a set day.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we do a lot of trainings and outreach in the community under our grants. So usually a good portion of my day is spent doing that type of stuff as well.
Cool. When you're going undercover, like what does that look like? Is there like a way you enter into that situation or was that? If you're able to talk about that.
It just depends. We have the delay. So I'm the only female on the squad, and then we have three males. One of them is more of like our he's our licensing guy and handles like our equipment and more of that stuff. So he doesn't do a lot of the undercover. So we have kind of two other guys that do full time undercover and myself.
Okay.
So it could be everything from maybe we're targeting sex buyers 1 week.
Yeah.
So back when, are you guys familiar with Backpage?
I am, yeah.
Okay. So when Backpage was up and running, or even another online like escort site, I might throw up an undercover ad up online, and we would target sex buyers for that day.
Okay.
And then a lot of times throwing those ads up leads to like drug stuff, because people will hit you up and want to supply you drugs, you know, thinking that you're an escort. So then it segues into that. We've had cases where we've had gun cases develop off of something like that.
Wow.
And then just a lot of social media nowadays is being used for recruiting, like sex trafficking, and just like narcotic selling as well. So depending on what it is, You know, we have a variety of, you know, fake undercover profiles that we can deal with different things.
Yeah.
Wow. And then some of it's just, you know, older guys too looking for, you know, underage kids, obviously, to, you know, exchange pictures with or sex acts, things like that. We work really closely with our Internet Crime Against Children unit because a lot of our stuff overlaps with them.
Is that pretty, like, frequent? Like, there's a whole unit that just works on, like, Internet crimes against children?
Yeah, yeah. So they're separated. There's actually only two detectives in it, but it's fully staffed. They just, that's all they have right now. So frequently they'll ask us for help and we'll go help them with like search warrants and making arrests and things like that. And then sometimes they'll come help us as well because our two things overlap fairly frequently with traffic, and maybe there's not a, it's not a trafficking outcome potentially, but there's a lot of like photographs and stuff in exchange. So.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Okay, so what's going on specifically in Tucson? And also, you mentioned, like, what it kind of looks like in Tucson already, but, yeah, are there certain problems right now that are pretty hot topics?
I'd say our biggest things that we deal with on a regular basis are going to be, we get a lot of, we refer to them as kind of high-risk juvenile cases, which are, a lot of our kids, like, mostly who are runaways, and then we also have kids that get targeted on social media. So social media is like huge right now, actually for youth and adults. We're finding out that probably a good 90% of our cases, once we start interviewing people, that we find out that they met their trafficker like online, whether it was on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, whether they're over 18 or under 18, that seems to be the link up. Or like a dating site or, you know, a fake job site, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's a huge thing right now that's really popular is the social media angle.
Okay.
We do have a high level of street prostitution in Tucson. Grant and Oracle is a really busy spot right now.
Really?
For you guys are probably too young, but old school people used to think of like Miracle Mile. It used to be a hot spot. Not so much anymore. So we have a couple little pockets of some high level street prostitution. And then just like the online escort sites. So those are kind of our three big areas: social media, online escort sites, and street prostitution.
Gotcha.
And then obviously we have our high-risk juveniles and our adults. It just depends on where they fall in. And they are, we find them at all. We find youth online, we find them on the streets, you know, on social media. So all those aspects overlap together.
Okay.
Are those like the street prostitution and the social media like interactions, is that forced or are most of them like on their own trying to make money?
There are some girls who are working the streets that legitimately I think are, you know, just doing it on them. Most of them unfortunately are doing it to support drug habits, we find. So part of our grant, our task force, is we have a victim-centered approach, which means when we go out and we do these stings, we're not looking to arrest the girls. We're looking to potentially, you know, recover them, find out if they're being forced to do it. And even if they're not, we're going to offer them services. So we work with Kodak here in town.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have heard of them.
What do they stand for?
It's actually just Kodak.
Oh, okay.
It's like
okay.
C-O-D-A-C, yeah. It's like health and recovery services, basically. So they can provide a variety of resources to the victims. So, like, actually a couple weeks ago, we went out on the streets and sent some undercover guys out to make sex deals with girls. And then, you know, we pulled them over in a car and got them out. Instead of taking them to jail, we just kind of conduct almost like an intake interview with them. But we'll do it on the street. And we just, you know, we let them know, hey, we're not here to take you to jail, but we would like to find out what's going on with you.
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten, they're never, you know, they don't tell us they have pimps, even if we suspect they do. Because we'll look for certain indicators or red flags. But most of the time, they won't tell us. So then we just at least try to give them the opportunity to, you know, go somewhere safe with us or get out of that situation, you know, go meet with Kodak. We'll give them a packet at a minimum to take with them for information, maybe give them some hygiene products, some food, drink, that kind of thing, and then, you know, send them on their way. So.
Gotcha. That's really cool that you guys have a victim approach. I feel like, do you think that a lot of police forces go that way, that direction, or do you think they're more...
I think maybe now, early on, not so much. You know, they were just arresting, you know, the girls for prostitution and not asking any questions and just shipping them to jail. And now I think that is more, trafficking has come to light a lot more across the country. You're seeing the news a lot and people are being educated. that now they're realizing, oh, well, maybe we should take that extra time to at least, you know, ask some questions.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the person still goes to jail because, you know, they might have other issues like warrants or drugs or things like that, but we're hoping now to train them to, well, you know, try to look for, you know, like these indicators or try to ask these questions at least and do a little bit more digging.
Okay. And then I had another question about the, you said that you look for indicators of pimps when you're out there. Do you, what are the indicators? Like, how can you tell?
So they're kind of a little different for juveniles and adults. Juveniles, it's a little maybe easier. As far as one of the huge ones are like an age-inappropriate boyfriend or girlfriend.
Okay.
You know, are they like a teenager and they're dating, you know, they're with an older male or an older female that clearly they shouldn't be with, you know, it's not a family member or anything like that. Do they have multiple electronics in their possession? You know, because why, you know, why do they have one or two cell phones? If they do, where did they get them? Those kids I know do not have money to afford those things. Girls particularly, you know, if their hair is done or their nails are done, or they have designer clothes, which this could be for boys too. You know, nice shoes, clothing, brand name, material items, and then of course, you know, cash. It's like, where are they getting that from?
Yeah.
Somebody is providing that to them. And so those are things that we obviously want to look for.
Yeah.
So those are a little easier with the juveniles to look for. As far as adults, we look for tattoos. There's certain tattoos that we know that, not always, but can be an indicator that they're in a trafficking situation. Juveniles could have them too.
Okay.
You know, drug use. Do they know, kind of like if you're questioning them, you know, are they from here? Do they know like where they're at, the area? Are they able to give answers easily to things that most people should be able to reply to, like if they encounter the police, you know, where do you live, what's your phone number, what's your address, you know, where did you sleep last night, do you have their ID or documentation with them, you know, if not, well, who has it, you know, we try to figure out if they've been threatened, you know, if we can look in their phones, that's great, because sometimes we'll see, you know, text messages or certain nicknames that will pop up that they use for their pimp.
Okay.
Sometimes that's not possible, you know, if they won't let you look in their phone, but maybe you catch something that pops up on the phone. So
yeah,
a big variety of that, you know, and then of course, you know, depending on the situation again, you know, if they have hotel keys and, you know, like sexual related items, you know, condoms, lubricants and stuff. I mean, clearly what's going on.
Yeah.
So
how often do you come across male prostitution, or is it strictly like predominantly female every time?
It's predominantly female. There are some males out there, and there are males that post online, just as well as like transgender as well, things like that. It's definitely more underreported for them, even it is like than for females, as far as I think you mentioned, like, you know, human trafficking is like an underreported crime. Well, and we always tell people when we do our presentations that we tend to just talk about like the girls because most of our victims are female. But they certainly can be any race, any age, you know, anything like that. But predominantly they are female.
Yeah.
And then our traffickers are predominantly male.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it's just, maybe they don't come across it so much, or if people do encounter them, they just don't see that as a situation.
Yeah.
So they're not even asking potential questions.
Yeah.
But we've had a couple, but not that many.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then when I was working with human trafficking in Silicon Valley, it tended to be more labor trafficking that we ran into. Do you deal with more sex trafficking in Tucson, or is there a lot of labor trafficking that you guys
It's come across? Almost all sex trafficking here.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
So we do both. So we investigate human trafficking, and you have sex trafficking and labor trafficking.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff here is sex trafficking.
Wow.
We don't have a lot of the agriculture aspect. The places we find potential labor trafficking here is like the massage parlors, nail salons, restaurants, hotels, like domestic servitude situations.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't get a lot of tips even about labor trafficking. With the massage parlors, they tend to be both. Usually is that they might have a labor trafficking situation where they're not being paid fairly. They don't have possessions of their documents and their papers, but then they're also being forced to conduct prostitution in the massage parlors. So we're seeing that as a big trend going on right now in Tucson, as well as I know in other cities as well. That's a thing where both of those things are happening.
Okay.
And they're really hard to investigate because you have language barriers. Most of them don't speak English, or if they do, they don't tell you they speak English. You know, you have cultural factors involved where, you know, it's completely usually different from, you know, where they come. Maybe it's accepted there, things like that. So those cases are actually even harder
Yeah.
To prove that our sex trafficking cases, and unfortunately, actually in the 4 years, we've never had a labor trafficking case that we've been able to prove.
Wow.
And bring to court, so.
That's wild because it was so switched when I was working with it. That's interesting.
Yeah. We've had a couple that we've investigated, but we've got no cooperation where we've been able to make a good case, so.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. How can individuals, like, partner with you guys so that they can tip you off, or they can find tip, or, like, they can know what to look for to help you guys out?
I think as far as partnering, that's a little hard, but I think any way that someone can suggest, I think the biggest thing is to just bring awareness and information to the community. Because if people aren't informed, they're not going to know, you know, what's going on, what to look for. And so I think that the first line is just to educate the community and make them aware that this is a problem here.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people think, well, you know, it doesn't happen here in Tucson, or not in my backyard, or, you know, not my kid, that wouldn't happen to them. But I teach a parent class that we just started a couple months ago about kind of just like basic sex trafficking information, but about how it relates to social media right now.
Yeah.
I mean, kids are exposed everywhere, and you can lock down your home computer as much as you want, but I guarantee you, you know, they're going to go online and they're going to have access somewhere else.
Yeah,
and so they need to be aware of what is going on and what is out there. And, you know, just do the best they can to like have a discussion with their kids about, hey, you know, I just want you to be safe, and, you know, you need to know about this stuff.
Definitely.
So, I mean, we have a Facebook page where we put a lot of information on, and Saturn.org is our website. And there's information on there, like indicators and like hotline tip, like a non-emergency tip line.
Okay.
You can email it to like our website. It's all on there. Or 88 Crime. You know, any of those would be outlets for a non-emergency situation. Because quite frankly, unless someone is like actively like being assaulted or something like that, you know, being snatched off the street or something, you know, a 911 response, they're going to be waiting for hours.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just realistic with staffing. If, you know, if someone just is like, hey, I have a suspicious. So we encourage people, just take down as much information as you can, you know, descriptions of the people, if you can get a license plate, you know, if you overhear someone talking, a phone number, a hotel, whatever the situation is, and then forward that to our tip line, and then we can follow up on it later.
Okay.
So.
Do you get tips frequently from that, or?
We do. We get probably pretty frequently from 88 Crime. I probably get at least one a week. And then to our Saturn email, we get stuff really frequently to the inbox as well.
Okay. Well,
so
that's good. That's
You know, and sometimes they're nothing. Sometimes they're just, you know, well, you know, I saw this and it's nothing we can follow up on, and then other times it is. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Recently, there is a case in the news that kind of hit Tucson pretty hard. The abandoned Southside camp. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, that case drove us crazy. No,
yeah.
Our unit was actually out of town when that happened.
Oh.
People were blowing up my phone that I have contacts with. You know, oh, my God, what's going on?
Yeah.
You probably know now, there it wasn't a sex trafficking.
Yeah.
I think that finally came to light. And so the biggest problem with that is this group that went out there, and not that their maybe intent, you know, they didn't have good intentions about what they do, maybe the people that they help, but was totally blown out of proportion. And they, you know, they went on social media and they posted all these things that were just not true.
Okay.
And they got everybody on board, you know, that everybody's calling and freaking out on social media, thinking that this is a sex trafficking camp when, you know, that wasn't the case. The police had been out there, they looked at it, they found no evidence. They didn't want to accept that, and so they kept putting out their own theories, refused to vacate the property. It became a big deal. They were armed,
and they
stayed there for, I don't even know how long. Like, it went on for like a week. Like, we were back in town. They were still out there. I know that we had police out there, and I never went out there.
Yeah.
So I don't know a lot about the interactions, but I do know that, you know, they went out there and they let them stay for a certain period, I think. Eventually, they were trespassed finally by, I think, the property owners. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's just sad because it just got so blown out of control, and they weren't delivering the facts, you know, and they were making up stuff, basically, that just wasn't true, you know, and it had been investigated by the police and people were handling it. But I think they just didn't like that answer, and so they just continued to kind of fuel the fire of all these other, you know, conspiracy theorists that came on. So Yeah, it got a little crazy.
Yeah, it did get a little crazy.
So we tried to put stuff out on our website that was like, you know, hey, this isn't true. Here's what really happened. The police went out there, you know, but
yeah,
I think it was overshadowed by
all the drama.
Yeah.
So what was it that they found then?
It just was an abandoned camp, basically. Mm-hmm. Maybe a homeless camp. You know, I don't even think that we really know. I mean, but they didn't find any evidence of like child sex trafficking being going on there.
Well, that's good.
You know, it could have been at one point, you know, who knows, maybe it was a drop camp, like, for, you know, illegal aliens coming up, you know, and I don't know. Like I said, I never got to go see it, but I knew that it was not a child sex trafficking camp, so.
You guys got a lot of heat for that one, too.
Yeah. So.
Fortunately.
Yeah, you know, people just need to be careful, you know, about, especially with social media, is you just need to be careful about what you say or what you put out there, you know, without checking the facts, because.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it is a very concerning subject, you know, obviously, but, you know, you don't want people freaking out, you know, when they don't know all the facts yet, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Wow. Like, can you tell us about anything that's happened in the past with cases? Like, any specifics, or do you have anything you'd like to say?
I'm trying to think. It's kind of slow right now, because we kind of have we're wrapping up toward the end of our grant before we got our new stuff. January, so every January is Human Trafficking Month, and we have the gem show here in Tucson in February, so it kind of works out good. Because any large venue that draws a lot of people is a big draw for sex trafficking.
Definitely.
Because they're all about making money, of course. You know, Super Bowl, golf tournaments, gem show, you know, Comic-Con, anything that a lot of people are going to be at. So we do that every January. We go out and we educate all the hotels. We give them materials. The airport got on board last year. They now have stuff up on their monitors. But when we were doing like a canvassing, which basically means we were spot checking all the hotels and handing out information for them, we recovered a 15, she actually just turned 16, a 16-year-old minor at one of the hotels.
Wow.
Just in the parking lot, just suspicious activity for us.
Yeah.
You know, we were able to see some things that this doesn't look quite right. And so, I mean, literally, we just, like, went up and started talking to them, and immediately found out that she was a minor, and we were able to figure out that she was being posted on Backpage at the time.
Mm.
And so we recovered her, and that case just got charged maybe about a month ago. We charged two people with sex trafficking of a minor.
Did she tell you she was on Backpage?
No, but we found her phone number was associated to some ads that were found, so.
Gotcha.
She had some distinct markings on her that we were able to tell it was her, even though she was, you know, didn't completely show her face.
Gotcha.
So.
Mm.
So what happens to, like, minors after something like that when they're kind of like, they're recovered, and where do they go, or what's the next step for them?
Well, it depends if they're runaways or not, and if they are in Department of Child Services, or if they still live with her mom. This particular juvenile lived with their parents still, so she was sent back. She's not from Tucson, so she was sent back to live with her parents, and she still is there. They're still involved in the court process, so that's still an ongoing case. And she's afforded, though, the same, even though they're not in Tucson, our support services here will try to coordinate with the family to get them assistance where they are.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, now if they're with DCS, the Department of Child Services, they'll go back with their caseworkers, and usually they are living in group homes, which is really hard for us because it's a vicious cycle because group homes aren't secure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they can't, you know, put hands on kids. If they try to leave, they just have to let them go. All of them are free to come and go. And so sometimes I'll go out on a call in the middle of the night, and maybe I don't have enough evidence that night to prove that anything's going on, but I really think it is. So we'll collect what we can that night. You know, DCS will come and take the youth and put them back in the group home. Mm-hmm. I might not even get home to my house, and I get a call that they ran away again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow. It's such a vicious revolving door with the juveniles a lot of times. That's probably just the hardest aspect of working this kind of activity, is that there's not a lot of resources for youth. There's a little bit more for adults. Like, we have housing here and beds that we can put our adult victims in, but the juveniles, it's really juvenile detention or a group home, or they get returned to their parent, you know, and there's not a lot stopping them from taking off again if they're not in detention.
That's
So sometimes, even though I hate it, like, it sounds mean, but sometimes I'm like, I really hope they have a warrant or drugs or, you know, maybe they're trying to get hinky with us, that, you know, we can put them in detention, because at least we know that they're safe there and we know we're going to find them the next day, you know, and you want them to settle down. A lot of times they're on drugs, you know, and get stable and be able to talk to us. Because usually in that first, you know, contact we have with them, they're not immediately like, oh my god, thank you, you know, this is what's going on. They tell you the whole story. Like, that never happens. It takes us probably, I'd say an average sex trafficking case takes about 6 months. To, like, just go through, by the time you analyze evidence and social media stuff and phones and sort of search warrants and all that stuff that you have to get nowadays. So it takes a long time.
Yeah. What's, like, the most frequently, like, how do kids get into that situation? What's the most frequent route for them?
Social media.
Social media. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. They meet somebody online, because you can be anybody you want to online.
Okay.
You know, anybody can make a fake profile, you know, not just the cops. I mean, anybody can make fake profiles nowadays.
Yeah.
So you can be, you know, anybody you want, male, female, pretend you're 15, 20, 30. And so who they think is, you know, a legitimate, like, maybe they think that they're talking to a 15-year-old boy, you know, who sounds nice and he's, you know, saying all the right things and nice things, is usually, you know, it could be like a 30-year-old guy.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't know it until maybe it's too late. Meaning, what they'll do is we call it grooming. So there's like four stages of a grooming cycle. Like, the first one is like targeting. So they'll target, and this could be for adults too. They'll target their person by, you know, going online, just, you know, spending all day looking for that right person.
Yeah.
And then they're going to try to develop, like, a friendship with them. You know, slowly they're going to start talking to them, and maybe they buy them a couple nice things, gifts and things like that. Then they're going to try to start making it into, like, a loving relationship, like, I'm your boyfriend or I'm your girlfriend, you know, and build that trust, that bond. They're really going to work on it. And then when they get them sucked in enough, that's when it's going to kind of flip a little bit. They're not necessarily going to become abusive. They could, but the manipulation is going to start, you know, and that forced fraud and coercion. And you better do this for me now or else, you know, remember that photo that you sent of yourself? Well, I'm going to share it with everybody, or I'm going to tell your parents or your teachers or things like that.
Yeah.
They start blackmailing them and threatening them. So.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And they just feel trapped, you know. I mean, they're kids. I mean, kids just don't.
Yeah.
They don't think, you know, oh, I should stop and tell my parents or stop and tell the police. They just feel like there's no way out. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, almost all of them, we find have met somebody on some kind of site, whether it's Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, or like some obscure dating site, or there's so many things out there now that, like, it changes daily. We almost can't keep up.
Yeah.
But Snapchat, Instagram, and Facebook are the big ones.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Those are the,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, the mainstream, and that's for, like, across, like, all races and age levels, so.
Okay. So yeah, even adults, that's, like, kind of the same process that they go through with social media. Okay.
That's usually it. That's the most common way that we see nowadays. But it's rare that it's, like, some stranger that just comes and, like, snatches somebody and, you know, starts to do put them in that process. That's very rare. I don't even know that we've had one of those, actually, so.
Very manipulative.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, when I started kind of learning more about trafficking, and specifically labor trafficking, it was also extremely manipulative, and, like, these people were very educated individuals that were just, like, tricked into their situations, and it always impressed me, because I was like, anyone can be manipulated into this. Like, it's not any specific type of person. It's like, people were engineers that I was working with, and all of a sudden they were in this situation.
And that's what we try to let people know, is, you know, a trafficker can be anybody. It's not like you see on TV, you know, like, you got the old school, you know, Huggy Bear pin with the fedora, and, you know, he's the black guy with the fur coat. And, I mean, it can be any race, any age, any gender. We've had teens trafficking other teens.
Wow.
I have a case where a 18-year-old recruited her 17-year-old best friend.
Oh my
gosh.
Come
and work for, now there was another trafficker. She was just kind of the recruiter in it, but still, we were able to charge her, recruited her underage friend to come and work with the guy who was the pimp, and then there was actually another adult involved.
Wow.
You know, and there was a mini, it was based on some true facts in Texas recently. I think it's called 8 Days. And that was a situation where a girl went to a party, and again, some of her friends had, oh, I'll give you a ride home, and they had hooked her up again with somebody else. Like, they basically got her into the trafficking situation, some peers that were at her school.
Wow.
So that happens. A lot, it could be family members. A lot of times we'll see, if they're younger kids, we'll see maybe family members will traffic their kids, like, in lieu of rent, like, the mom will, you know, exchange, unfortunately, you know, sexual favors with the kids, or obviously child molestation, child pornography, in exchange for, you know, not paying her rent, or something like that. Dang. So we've seen family members be involved. I mean, then we've seen strangers, we see, you know, boyfriends, girlfriends, like, turn, you know, if somebody's got a big thing right now with the kids too, is this, the whole sexting stuff, you know, sending nude photos and images and things like that, and then, you know, they break up, and then next thing you know, they're using it against them for something, extortion, things like that. So it can happen in a lot of different ways. I mean, just like you said, and I mean, the force is easy. The fraud, you know, a lot of times it's promise of a better life or a better job or something's going to go on, and they promise them that, you know. I had a girl one time, she's like, well, it was like a fairy tale. I promised me the fairy tale, and then that was the situation when she got to where she was going. So, I mean, everybody, I think, has some type of little, you know, weakness or something that it just takes that right person at the right moment in your life, you know, to kind of jump on and then exploit you for their own benefit.
Definitely. Definitely.
So if a teen is trafficking another teen, like, and they're both minors, what happens to the one that was, like, causing it? Like, since they're a minor, how do they get charged?
They'll get arrested as well. Yeah, there's certain crimes that you can be charged as an adult, and we also charge as in the federal system. The one girl, she was actually 18, so she got charged as an adult in the federal system.
Wow. And so for those two girls, the one that got her, that her best friend, into it, did you ever get to talk to the girl that got her friend into it? Like, what was her
like, motive? Like, was she
like, oh, this is okay? Like, I don't know, I feel like if she was in that situation, she'd be like, I don't want anyone else to be in that situation, but maybe she's not thinking that way, or she thinks it's okay.
Well, still ongoing case, I can't talk about it too much, but there's a lot of circumstances in her life, you know, as well, that, you know, contributed to her behavior.
Okay.
You know, a lot of issues with her past and things that she was going through, you know, and later, obviously, you know, she did express remorse for what had happened. But, you know, and drugs, you know, were a part of, you know, her life at the time, what was going on. So, you know, not a lot of clear thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, it's just a couple decisions, you know, led her to be getting somebody else involved and some with people that she was dealing with. So.
Yeah.
And impact her life.
Like. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. This line of work just takes probably some sort of toll on you, because you're getting bad news all the time. Like, how do you deal with that? Do you have certain steps that you take to protect yourself?
Not really. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it sounds weird, but I mean, none of this stuff bothers me as far as, like, on a personal level. I think maybe I've just been on for so long. I've seen so much, you know, being in homicide for 8 years. I certainly saw a lot of stuff. I worked in adult sex crimes, narcotics. So it's very easy for me to just be like, this is work, this is my job, and then my personal life.
That's good.
The only thing that's frustrating for me, you know, is like working with some of the young girls, you know, I just wish the system was a little bit better to get them help and get them rehabilitated and, you know, back on track.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you become close, but you know, I do become closer with some of the girls I work with. You know, one that we recovered, she had to go to detention because she had some other things going on that she did, but she hated my guts when she'd been on the run for like a year. This was earlier this year as well, and we finally found her posting online, and so we did an undercover operation, and we recovered her, and it was clear she was very high on drugs at the time, and wanted nothing to do with me, called me all kinds of nasty names I hadn't even heard of before. You know, just very vile hate, like, just spewing out of her. And I remember talking to a friend of mine that I work with at juvenile court. I was like, oh my gosh, this girl's just so angry. I'm like, you wouldn't believe, like, just how she was. I'm like, I've never met a juvenile so just full of, like, hate and venom, like, literally. And So we took her in, no evidence that she actually had a pimp. Mm-hmm. She'd just been on the streets basically, living in, you know, hotels and getting money to do what she had to do. And so got her juvenile, she got clean, and I ended up talking to her more, like, you know, going through all her stuff. And ultimately we just didn't have a case.
Yeah.
But she got cleaned up, and I ended up going to her, she got her GED, wow, juvenile. I went to her graduation.
Oh,
you know, she came up and thanked me basically and hugged me, and she was like, I just wanted to say I'm really sorry for,
wow,
you know, how I met you that first night. Yeah. And, you know, obviously I realize now it was for the best. Yeah. And she went up to a treatment center and got treatment, and she'll probably be, I think she turns 18 here in the next couple months.
Wow.
So she'll be released. Last I heard, she's doing very well still, so.
Good.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
That's
good. So those, yeah, are always nice. Like, you go from, like, one extreme to, like, okay, yeah, we went through the cycle and it all worked out and,
yeah,
you know, so.
There's, you see hope, too.
Exactly. So, you know, I always look at it as if, you know, like, all these cases are so hard to prosecute, of course, and whether they're, we're dealing with youth or adults, to get the victims to cooperate with us. But if we can just get, you know, like, that one, or we recover one juvenile and make a difference, then, I mean, we've made a difference. So you just have to keep going at it, even though you have a lot of failures as far as, like, successful cases. But, you know, if we were able, even if we were able to recover them and we didn't make a case, that's still a win, so.
Definitely. Yeah. What are some misconceptions that you run into with the line of work that you're in?
Specifically for, like, the trafficking stuff?
Yeah.
Probably that it just doesn't happen here. You know, the whole, it's not my kid that's going to get into it, I don't need to know about that, and then just that prostitution is a victimless crime.
Okay.
So it's just changing the way of thinking, you know, within the community that, you know, it is going on, this is what's actually happening, your kids are at risk, and making people just believe that it is a problem.
Yeah.
So, because I think that's still the biggest thing that we find when we go talk to people sometimes, is they just don't think it's an issue here. Or that's not going to happen to my kid, you know, because my kid, we live in the foothills, and they're a straight A student, and they're on the honor roll, and that's just not true. So
yeah,
so it's just changing those misconceptions about, you know, it can happen to anyone, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's just so hidden, you don't think about it being two doors down or whatever.
And the age of, you know, social media has changed everything so much in the last, you know, several years. You know, I tell him, you know, when I was little, it was, you know, the guy, you know, with the candy or the little puppy dog in the park, and now it's not. Before, predators would have to go to places where kids would hang out, you know, they'd have to go to the park or outside the school or the malls or whatever. Well, now they can just sit at home in the safety of their homes and just sit online all day long on their phones or their internet, just looking for that right person to start up a communication with.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's gotten a lot easier for them. You know, when they can just sit back and hide and work on something. So it's really hard to, I mean, it's not going to go away. It's just going to get worse, you know. I mean, it's unfortunate because it should be, you know, a nice, fun thing that kids should be able to enjoy. But unfortunately, it's turned into a huge outlet for predators. So So basically the next best thing is just try to get to as many people as we can and make them aware of what's going on and provide them information. And then, you know, let parents do what they want with it, of course. But
yeah, definitely.
And teach kids too that, you know, think before you post. You know, like, I always tell the kid, we teach the kids, and I'm like, why do you have 4,000 friends? You don't know 4,000 people, you know? I mean, and it's just numbers with them. They like that high. Oh, look, I've got 4,000 friends, you know? And how many people likes their photo or likes their post? They're so obsessed with that kind of thing, or, you know, or looking good. And it's that, you know, the society. You know, the image that we present, everybody wants to be the prettiest or the, you know, the richest or something, and so they feed into that. And so when they get attention from people, you know, they like it, they accept it, they don't even think about what the consequences are going to be.
I mean, thinking back to when I was younger, I like didn't have anything on private mode. I was just like, yes, I want everyone to be my friend.
Yeah,
and all these likes. And now people friend me even when I'm on private mode, and they like, I'm like, I don't know you. Like,
yeah, I'm very selective now.
Yeah,
like, that's what we try to tell the kids. It's funny you said like about the likes. There's a video I found that's on whatever thing. It's called posting for likes. You know, and it's just like, it's just, you know, putting it out there. And what they don't realize is, you know, like that one selfie where it's, oh, it's just a selfie in the bathroom, and the next thing you know, it's like, oh, you're in your swimsuit, and then you're in your bra, and then, you know, it's just like one step more. So
definitely.
I think as a society too, you know, we need to change just how we think, you know, the whole you gotta look good and be good, and the beauty and the, you know, all the photoshopping, all that stuff is just so out of control that it just feeds into this vicious cycle of that with these, especially with these young girls.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So
definitely. Okay.
Yeah, well, is there anything you want to add before we?
We talked a lot.
Yeah, we kind of hit a lot of different things, but is there anything you want to tack on?
Can't really think of anything. You know, if anybody's interested in, you know, learning more, just please go to our websites. We do lots of trainings, everything from very formal stuff to informal, where we'll just come and talk to people. Or we have formal PowerPoints, everything from like an hour to 2 hours.
Okay.
We'll pretty much go anywhere. We don't really care. We just want to like get the word out to people. Obviously if anybody knows somebody or for emergency stuff, you know, obviously just make a 911 report, you know, when in doubt. Otherwise, you know, feel free to use tip lines, because if we don't have the information, there's, you know, we can't act on it.
Very true.
So, you know, there's the campaign, the slogan. It's like, you know, if you see something, say something. So. Yep. It's just kind of what we encourage.
Okay. Thank you so much for
coming
on.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Super interesting.
Yeah, very informative. It was good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're going to just plug our social media real quick. So you can find us on Instagram at
podcast.qlc.
Thank you. And that's also our email, podcast.qlc@gmail.com. And we have a Facebook called Quarter Life Crisis. So yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back every Monday.
See you next week.